I shouldn't be here. Josh is dead. And I'm here. I didn't just lose my husband. Jeannie and Patrick lost their son. Zach lost his brother. His grandma, his poor grandma's gonna have a heart attack when she finds out that her little Josh is gone. All I kept seeing, like, I just held his broken body.
That's 19-year-old Amber Hilberling. She's sitting in a small interview room at the Tulsa Police Department after her husband, 23-year-old Josh Hilberling, fell to his death from a high-rise apartment building in downtown Tulsa, Oklahoma. Amber is distraught. In the room with her, trying to comfort her, is her grandmother.
They were right. They kept saying, if we stay together, I'm going to kill him.
The two women likely don't realize that they're being recorded, and they definitely don't realize that this recording will be played for the jury in Amber's murder trial after she's charged with the murder of her husband.
I think that the Amber Hilberling case was, you know, so bizarre in that it was this kind of unbelievably gruesome and dramatic, and in a way, kind of, you know, what some in the industry might even describe as like a sexy crime, because it got absolutely everyone's attention.
Today's case is nothing short of a tragedy for every single person involved. A young mom is accused of pushing her husband to death after an argument. She claims it was a tragic accident, but prosecutors, as well as her husband's family, believe she did it on purpose. And just when you think the case is over, another tragedy occurs.
I was shocked when I heard that Amber Hilberling had died.
This is Jillian, and you are listening to Court Junkie, episode 79. On June 7th, 2011, before Amber was in that room at the police station with her grandmother, she was inside apartment number 2509, on the 25th floor of a building called the University Club Tower in downtown Tulsa.
This was definitely, you know, a very unique and original building. It's completely like a circle, sort of a cylinder shape, and really stood out in the skyline. And so there were 360 views. Obviously, you know, apartments went all the way around. You know, a really nice, beautiful building when you walk in the lobby.
That's Caitlin Alexander, at the time, a local reporter from KTUL who was covering the case. We'll hear more from her later. But let's go back inside that apartment where Amber and her husband, Josh, were arguing. Not only according to Amber herself, but to Armando Rosales, a maintenance worker in the building, who had come to apartment 2509 to repair a bedroom window that had been broken earlier in the day. The following is what Armando told Detective Felton. When Armando arrived, he said both Amber and Josh appeared to be upset, as though they had been arguing prior to his arrival. He went to the balcony of the bedroom to start the repairs, while Amber and Josh were back in the living room. He said he didn't hear any sounds of arguing or of a fight, but that he did hear the sound of glass breaking, and then the sound of Josh screaming. He said he waited for a short time and then went back into the living room. No one was there at first, but a few seconds later, Amber ran back in the front door, yelling, "My husband fell out of the window. I pushed him. He's probably dead." He and Amber got into the building's elevator to go down and look for Josh. He said Amber kept repeating, "I pushed him through the window. Is he dead?" Armando said he was uneasy, and so he took her down to the lobby, as opposed to the 8th floor where Josh had fallen, partly so he could get away from her. Meanwhile, a neighbor called 911. It was 4:09 p.m.
Police department.
For the Denver Park Apartments, and I just saw someone jump out of their window out of probably the 17th, 19th floor of the University Club Tower Apartments at 17th in Denver.
17th, the name of that place is University
Club.
This is M7. We're on the way.
All right. I was sitting out smoking a cigarette here, looking right at, I'm looking right at it. The glass broke and he fell down.
Wow. 17-4, huh? Okay.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17-4.
Okay. All right, sir. We got help on the way then.
All right. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Paramedics and police officers arrived on the scene. They found Josh lying on his stomach on top of the 8th-floor parking garage. He had fallen 17 stories to his death. One of the responders escorted Amber up to the 8th floor, and when she saw her husband's body, she ran up to him and turned him over. She asked the paramedics to please fix him and said she had pushed him and that he had fallen out of the window. Amber was visibly upset. She was also 7 months pregnant. Officer Don Holloway took Amber from the scene and transported her, along with her grandmother, who had also arrived at the scene, to the police station. He took them to a detective division interview room and then left them alone. But when he saw that Amber and her grandmother were going to talk about what happened, he turned on their recording equipment.
I wonder if his parents know yet.
I'm sure they did, but...
They were right. They kept saying, if we stay together, I'm going to kill him. How did this happen? Why did he have to fall out the window? Fall out a window? Why did Mom put us in that apartment? Why are we there? Why were we there? Why didn't I just leave? He was leaving. I kept just saying, and when he leaves, I'll go to my grandma's. Why didn't I just leave? He'd still be alive. Not only is he dead, but the way he died, I just wish it would leave my head. Every time I close my eyes, I see it. It's like torture. My subconscious just keeps playing it over and over and over again. As if one time seeing it isn't bad enough, I have to see it over and over and over. I just want to save him. At least if I can go back and take back the push, at least I can save him.
The push?
The push. I pushed him against the wall and he... Oh my God.
Detective Felton went in to interview Amber. He asked if she would be willing to give a statement, and she said her mother was getting her an attorney. But later, after an attorney came to represent her, she did give them a statement about what happened. The following is the officer's account of what she said. Quote, Amber said Josh was upset and angry because she was going to do laundry and was removing his own clothing from the laundry basket. She theorized that at that moment, Josh realized their marriage was coming to an end, and he became upset and threw the laundry basket at a window, breaking it. She stated when the repairman began to fix the broken window, she and Josh went into the living room. They continued to argue about the decision to separate, and because Josh was packed to go on a trip to Tennessee. Amber said Josh grabbed her by the shoulders in the heat of the moment, and she had no thoughts of what he might do. She did state she did not believe Josh would hurt her. She said they were 2 to 3 feet away from the window when she pushed him away. She said she did not push him hard and that she only pushed him to get him away from her. She said they weren't screaming at each other, but arguing in an elevated voice. After she pushed him, Josh then fell backwards through the window. After interviewing Josh's family and friends, investigators found out that Josh had called his father that morning to ask for a ride to his parents' home. His father was working, and so he called at least 2 of his friends, asking them for a ride. Investigators also found a packed bag with Josh's belongings inside, right by the door of Josh and Amber's apartment. 4 hours after the incident, Amber was placed under arrest and charged with Josh's murder. She was released after posting $250,000 bond. Amber was born in Joplin, Missouri, and lived there until 2009, when she moved with her family to Tulsa, Oklahoma, after her mother's divorce. She reportedly has 5 siblings. Meanwhile, Josh had grown up in Tulsa and was a veteran with the United States Air Force. He also had 5 siblings, 3 brothers, and 2 sisters. Josh and Amber got married on July 30th, 2010. During the early part of their marriage, they lived in Alaska, where Josh was stationed in the Air Force. But somewhere along the way, the romance turned violent. In fact, just 1 month prior to his death, on May 9th, 2011, Josh filed for a restraining order against Amber. Under description of the incident, he wrote, quote, "On April 29th, 2011, my wife was outside crying. I tried to talk to her. She told me to leave her alone, so I did. I went back inside the house and waited on the couch. She came back inside and came to the living room and told me I was sleeping on the couch tonight, and I said okay. And then she grabbed the floor lamp and pushed/threw the lamp at me and busted me in the head. Then she ran upstairs, saying, 'Good, I hope it hurts.' Paramedics arrived and I went to the hospital. I received 10 staples and 11 stitches. I filed a police report on that Monday with Air Force Security Forces. This is not the first time this has happened. She hit me on February 18th and a police report was filed then also. She hit and pushed my head in the corner wall and cut my head open. She has assaulted me other times by punching me in the face, busting my lip open, and no police report was filed. She has thrown her phone at me, my steel-toe boots at me, and fractured my finger. I did not file then." The restraining order was eventually dismissed after neither Amber nor Josh reportedly showed up to the court hearing. But as it would turn out, there would be abuse allegations coming from both sides. Sergeant Dave Walker told reporters after Amber's arrest that each spouse's family is accusing the unrelated spouse of aggressive domestic violence. Quote, "It depends on what side of the family you talk to is who is the more aggressive one," he said. And in talking to the media, that was certainly true. Josh's father told reporters that Josh had wanted a divorce and that when he saw the Tulsa Police Department chaplain, he knew Amber had killed him. Quote, "She finally did it," he said. Meanwhile, Amber's side kept insisting that Josh was the abusive one. She said there were numerous other police reports that had been filed in Alaska in which he was the aggressor, and there was only one stating that she was. She said most of their arguments were related to how he treated her in front of his family and also about his drug abuse. She alleged that he had been addicted to OxyContin when they first began dating, but quit when he joined the Air Force. But she said he then started using drugs again while they were in Alaska, including synthetic marijuana. Amber's attorney, Jason Corns, told reporters that there was no criminal wrongdoing by Amber. He called it a tragedy for everyone involved, but said it wasn't a crime. Quote, "Without getting into specifics, there's a long history of this man, a 6'4", 220-pound college football player, abusing this young woman, including throughout her entire pregnancy," he said. Amber's legal team also made moves in civil court. In September, just 3 months after Josh's death, they filed a wrongful death lawsuit against the University Club Tower, alleging that Josh's accidental fall through the window was due to the building's negligence. They alleged that the window in the apartment was dangerously unsafe and had no business in a 25th floor living room. Amber's attorney called the window thin as a napkin and said that if the window had been, quote, reasonably safe, Amber would not be a widow and their now newly born child would have a father. Although Amber was released on bond, her bond was revoked just 6 months later after she failed 2 drug tests, testing positive for marijuana, and after she failed to charge her ankle monitor on at least 10 different occasions. Just prior to Amber's trial, prosecutors offered her a plea deal. She would plead no contest and would spend just 5 years in prison with an added 15 years of probation. Amber declined. So instead, she would be taking her chances at trial, where if found guilty of second-degree murder, she would be facing 10 years to life in prison if convicted. Now remember, Amber had admitted to police that she did push Josh, but did she do it in self-defense as she claimed, or was it something more sinister? That's what the jury would have to decide. Caitlin Alexander was a reporter at the time for KTUL. After college, she was immediately offered the job in Tulsa, and she took it. She remembers going down to Tulsa with her mom, looking for places to live, when one building in particular caught her eye.
So my mom and I were just, you know, going to all these different complexes, whatever, and I noticed this beautiful, tall skyscraper that's impossible to miss in the downtown skyline. Interestingly enough, kind of like greenish tinge, which is kind of weird, but I've never done urban living. And I loved the idea that it was in downtown Tulsa and looked to have these amazing views.
The building she's referring to is University Club Tower, the very place where the murder in the trial she would be covering a little over a year later had taken place. She said it was a little eerie living there, knowing that this high-profile case had originated there.
You know, just kind of alarming to think about the fact that Josh Hilberling fell to that top floor of the parking garage, because I lived on the ninth floor of that building. So just to think, and it wound up being, you know, not on the same side or anything, but just to think, you know, I could have conceivably seen, you know, so much of this case unfold just by merit of where I was living. And, you know, nobody obviously at the building talked about it. No one I ever met said anything, but it was just so eerie then at that point to know that, you know, walking past those windows, somebody went through that window. Just crazy.
Caitlin was assigned to cover Amber's trial, which started in March 2013. And so she went every day and sat through the testimony.
I think that the Amber Hilberling case was, you know, so bizarre in that it was this kind of unbelievably gruesome and dramatic, and in a way kind of, you know, what some in the industry might even describe as like a sexy crime, because it got absolutely everyone's attention. Here was Amber Hilberling, this beautiful, beautiful, you know, young mother, and her husband, who was tall and, you know, a military man, well-built, and that this had all transpired in the middle of downtown Tulsa. So there were, you know, it was a pretty full courtroom each and every day. You pretty much knew when you got off on that particular floor that that was going to be the case where the Hilberling trial was, because that's what everybody was there for. And there were family members, many family members for both sides, for Josh and for Amber, who would be in the courtroom each and every day. And it was very, very, you know, kind of subdued in there. You know, there wasn't the conversation and stuff in between breaks. Everyone was really, you know, respectful of the seriousness of this case and the sensitivity. I think because it had to do with ultimately one family, anything that's kind of a husband and wife is so devastating to everyone involved. And I never saw, you know, sometimes when you're covering these sorts of cases, you see the defendant turn around or try to sneak a word or two to their family or smile, or, you know, they try to make each other feel better. I think that she was always very put together and very serious, understanding the gravity of what was coming her way.
At trial, prosecutors presented evidence that they said shows that Amber had intentionally killed Josh. One of the paramedics testified that Amber told him that she had grabbed Josh's foot as he went out the window, but that he was too heavy for her to hold on to. She told him that she did shove Josh, but that she never meant to kill him. Officer Don Holloway testified that when he took Amber and her grandmother to that interview room, he overheard Amber say to her grandmother that she and Josh got into a, quote, a fight, not a fight, but an argument. She said Josh threw something into a window and it broke. She then went into a bedroom while Josh was in the living room. When she came back into the living room, the argument continued. She said she pushed Josh into the wall and that he fell and that the wall was windows and that's why he fell out of it. She went on to say, I pushed him and he fell into the, like, the candlestick things and he fell out of the window. It was then when he went to go get a detective to turn on the room's recording equipment. Prosecutors showed the jury that video of Amber and her grandmother in the interview room.
Josh is gone. For forever. I'm only 19. I have the next 60 years to think about this. To let it torture me. I'm never gonna find someone that I love more than Josh. I'm never gonna find someone as perfect for me as he was. And I ruined all of it. God, why did I do that? God, I just want to go back.
What, the first time y'all got in a fight?
He's dead. I touched his bones. All broken and sticking out of his body. Everything was bent backwards. I rolled him over and just held him. I didn't care. Josh. Baby. I will never, ever forgive myself. I can't even begin to accept this. I want you to be here. Just come back, please. Please. I love you. I love you so much. I hope you are happy. I will spend the rest of my life paying for this.
Jurors were also shown video of the crime scene, where they could see Josh's body lying on top of the 8th floor parking garage. The medical examiner testified that Josh had suffered multiple fractures and lacerations all throughout his body. The cause of death was blunt force, and he ruled it a homicide. He also told the jury that he was unable to determine how Josh fell out of the window, whether he had been facing the window or whether his back was to it. One of the detectives testified that there was nothing out of place and no signs of a struggle inside Josh and Amber's apartment. But as he was searching it for evidence, he found that protective order Josh had filed against Amber just a month prior. He also said that Josh's bags were located by the front door and that they were packed with his clothes, a DVD player, and various papers. When interviewing the neighbors, they obtained statements from several people who had either seen or heard something when Josh fell. Across the street from the building, a man named Robert Baker was smoking a cigarette. He saw Josh fall from the window and said Josh was facing him as he fell. Another man said he heard glass break, looked up, and saw Josh falling, facing away from the building. And then a neighbor who lived directly next door to the couple said he heard Amber scream, "No, no, no," and then a running sound coming from the inside of the apartment going towards the windows, followed by a loud crashing sound of glass breaking. Caitlin told me that it is plausible that a neighbor could hear what went on inside that apartment.
In each of the apartments, my understanding anyway, mine was kind of a pie shape. So you walk in the front door and it's this long hallway to, you know, you kind of go past your kitchen, you go past a little closet, you go all the way back to that window that extends out kind of in that pie shape. And that wound up being very interesting in this case when you heard the testimony from or heard information about what the next door neighbors had reported hearing, which was that pounding footsteps at a rapid pace, pummeling down the hallway to when they heard the crash, as though someone had taken a running start, because I could picture that hallway in my mind from where I was living. And it was always very possible for me to hear kind of the movements of neighbors and such next door, hear conversations. The building was a bit older, so I don't know if that was a structural thing or what, but I could often hear my neighbors.
Prosecutors also presented testimony from an inmate who said that while she was in the Tulsa County Jail with Amber, Amber told her that Josh was going to move out and that she had caught him off guard and, quote, killed the bastard. But on cross-examination, Amber's attorney questioned the inmate's credibility, pointing to her rap sheet with more than 20 felony convictions, which included lying. Amber's defense started with calling a glass construction expert from Chicago to the stand. He testified that the glass in the apartment windows was, quote, too weak for its application. He said the glass, which was what he noted as single strength, is more commonly used in small windows and picture frames, not as windows in high-rise buildings. After his testimony, Amber then took the stand. Up until this point, Amber had been pretty stone-faced throughout the trial.
She was very serious, and she was always dressed very professionally and put together very well. I believe she took notes and, you know, was very serious about where the case was, where it was headed. I didn't see her interact or have any kind of, you know, happy moments with anyone who was there. And I think that she's smart enough to know how that might have looked, especially considering the massive media presence that was there. I mean, I would often sit next to a gentleman who was there from Dateline, or certainly from NBC. And so this was getting national attention as it was happening as well.
In Amber's testimony, she said she told Josh earlier that day that she wanted a divorce. They had fought, and he threw a laundry basket at her, breaking one of the smaller windows in their apartment, which is why the maintenance man had come to repair it. She described the fatal encounter as follows. She said she walked into the living room and Josh turned from the window and began walking towards her. They met one another at the end of the television, about 2 to 3 feet from the window. Josh then grabbed her shoulders with both hands. She pushed him and he fell into the wall between the candlesticks and the television and then out the window, all while looking at her. She admitted to pushing him, but only after he grabbed her. She said she loved him more than anything and that she didn't mean to kill him.
The general gist of Amber Hilberling's testimony was that the couple had this kind of turbulent or tumultuous relationship in which they argued quite a bit and that there was some kind of argument happening. If I'm recalling correctly, I believe that she said that she had been the one who'd packed his bags and left them near the door, wanting him out, that they had gotten up, that they had eaten together. There was some kind of argument. She went to fold laundry, I think it was. And at some point during this day, a maintenance man had shown up for, you know, a separate issue. And it ultimately all kind of culminated with, again, this disagreement later on where Amber said that Josh had grabbed her and she had shoved him to get him off her. And that had been enough to send him out the window.
Amber's attorney showed the jury a photo of her that was taken near Josh's body right after the fall. She appears to be distraught. She cried on the stand as she told the jury that she tried to roll him over and kiss him, that she just wanted him to wake up. Her attorney asked her if she ever expected that this would happen, and she said, not in a million years. As she testified, she was very soft-spoken.
That was the day that sticks out the most in my mind, was her testimony. And I can remember sitting there listening to her talk and had this overwhelming feeling that I don't know, to some extent with some of the responses about Josh specifically, that they lacked a certain level of sincerity or kind of came out almost as in a whisper so as to try to sound a certain way, which was different from how she would speak in other, you know, circumstances. I think that it might have come across to some jurors as potentially rehearsed, but the feeling in my stomach that day was that she was trying to garner sympathy, and I didn't necessarily feel it sticking.
On cross-examination, Assistant District Attorney Michelle Keeley noted that too, that Amber was speaking quietly now in court, but that, quote, that's not always the case. She asked Amber to get up from the stand and demonstrate how the push occurred. Amber said his hands were on her shoulders and that she pushed him by moving her wrists and touching his body with her fingers. She admitted that she feels bad because she pushed him and that he's now dead. After Amber's testimony, the prosecution put on a short rebuttal case in which they called their own glass expert to the stand, who said the glass used in the apartment was, quote, suitable for a high-rise building. I asked Caitlin what she made of the defense's argument that the windows were too thin.
I never had any reason to believe that there were structural window problems. I did actually, during some storms, experience a little bit of flooding through those windows, which probably had nothing to do with the thickness of the glass or anything of that nature, but it definitely drew my attention to those windows way more than I normally would have thought about.
After all the testimony was heard, the jury deliberated for about 2.5 hours before reaching their verdict.
I was not surprised by the verdict at all. I mean, I think that the state presented a very compelling case, you know, that there was documented history there of some level of domestic issues. And then, of course, there was that police video from the interrogation room the night that it happened. Amber sitting there, I believe, with her grandmother and is distraught and saying things like, you know, he's dead. I wish I were dead. I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, I wish I were dead. Everyone's going to think I'm a murderer. And that some of the thoughts that she was conveying in that moment when your feelings are the most raw were in many ways kind of defensive. So, I mean, I suppose that, yeah, the decision or the ultimate verdict was not that surprising.
The jury found her guilty and recommended 25 years in prison. There was speculation that the 25 years represented the 25 floors. In the pre-sentencing report that was submitted to the judge, Amber made the following statement, quote, there are so many factors I wish the court knew that played a part in the tragedy of June 7th, 2011. Factors taking the form of people, decisions made and unmade, lifestyles, and places. I have trust there will be a day all such truths shall be revealed to whomever it may concern, as there is a season for everything. Until that time, this is what I know occurred that haunting day in June, that has somehow brought me to writing this for the Oklahoma District Court. On June 7th, 2011, my husband and I had finally agreed that we were heading in very different directions. I had told him to call his family to come pick him up at our residence, located at the University Club Towers here in Tulsa, as I was preparing to leave myself. Josh became angry when he saw me taking his clothing out of our dirty laundry hamper and proceeded to break a bedroom window during his outburst. I contacted management, and someone was there to measure the broken bedroom window fairly quickly. After a short conversation with a maintenance employee, we let him alone to do his work on the outdoor balcony connecting the bedroom on one side. You could in no way see into the apartment living room area from that balcony. As time went on, Josh and I began arguing again in the living room. Eventually, we became within arm's distance from each other, and my husband reached out and grabbed my shoulders, digging his fingernails into me. It hurt me, as well as alarmed the baby boy growing inside my 7-month pregnant belly at the time. My instinct put my hands on my very large husband's chest and pushed him off me. According to my best memory, he tripped backwards and into the picture window that was a few feet behind where the altercation originated. I heard glass break, and then my entire being, the whole world, came to a silent stop as I tried to figure out what had just happened. I ran to the now empty window frame and looked down, just in time to see the man I had vowed would be half of my own soul till death hit the ground on the 8th floor parking garage of the structure. Every moment in time after that, even until now, I have tried to piece together how this could have happened to my husband and I. I have been charged and found guilty of being the person that caused this by 12 strangers that have always been made to believe I am capable of such horror based on half-truths and biased theories. What I receive is a sentence I will use every minute of to never stop fighting for what God himself witnessed that fateful day to be true. I am not guilty of anything but protecting me and my unborn child. Thank you for all consideration. When it came time for Amber to be sentenced, the judge decided to go with the jury's recommendation and sentenced her to 25 years in prison. She was also ordered to pay $10,000, as well as for Josh's funeral expenses. But as you can probably guess, this case doesn't end there. After the verdict, one of Amber's attorneys told reporters that they were disappointed, but that they would definitely be filing an appeal. Josh's family noted that they lost a son, Amber's family lost a daughter, and that no one really won. Amber also gave a jailhouse interview in which she addressed that plea deal she had been offered just prior to trial. She said she had decided not to take it because she completely had faith in the justice system and thought that no one would ever find her guilty of murder. But she said despite the outcome, she didn't regret not taking it. Amber's defense team did file an appeal, arguing that the jury should have been given the option to consider manslaughter, that the crime scene photos were irrelevant and gruesome, and that she had ineffective assistance of counsel. Her appeal was denied. And then, at 5:20 p.m. on Monday, October 24th, 2016, Amber, now 25 years old, was reportedly found hanging in her cell.
I was shocked when I heard that Amber Helberling had died. I was no longer in Tulsa. I believe this would have happened when I was in Memphis as a reporter, but you know, just shocked again because this case had been such a big part of, you know, I guess my professional career at that point, something that I'd followed so closely. And I never envisioned that being the case, especially because, you know, obviously 25 years serving whatever percent of it is a long time. You always heard how she wanted to come out of this for her son and give this life to her son. But then that realization, just, you know, somebody texted me the link to the article and I couldn't believe it, just thinking what a tragedy that this little boy lost both of his parents because of that one day.
Amber's cause of death was ruled asphyxial hanging, and the manner of death was ruled a suicide. Amber's family, however, disputes this and believes that she was murdered. A couple days after Amber's death, Caitlin's former news station received a letter from Amber, dated the day before she died. The letter was addressed to one of the station's executive producers, and it was in response to the station's request to interview her.
I believe it was days before her death, basically agreeing to an interview and wanting to share her side of the story, but also sharing some of the, you know, distrust she'd come to feel for reporters, which is understandable in her situation, that none of it had that kind of desperate tone that you would expect from someone who is contemplating ending their life. So I think that from that perspective, it is very kind of haunting and interesting.
In the letter, Amber agrees to be interviewed, writing in part, quote, "I want to point out first my appreciation for the offer of opportunity as well as the initial interest. That being said, I am willing to do an interview, despite my honest reservations. I hope it's not assumed that by me admitting such, I have a direct mistrust in your network specifically. Please understand the misfortune I've suffered from media interviews I had agreed to do on the popular promise of helping me, turning into another run of incomplete, often ridiculous theories. She said she would agree to do the interview because, quote, I can't let go of the hope that using my own voice in conversations about my own life will be the one and only chance I have to share the circumstances of my own reality. Thank you again. Sincerely, Amber Hilberling. Amber's mother, on behalf of Amber's estate, filed a lawsuit against the Oklahoma Department of Corrections, claiming that there was inadequate supervision and that it, quote, permitted the manipulation, coercion, and sexual exploitation of Hilberling throughout her detention. Her mom points to the fact that the security cameras were allegedly not working when Amber died, and that security checks at the correctional center were so lax that prisoners could hide their activities just by covering the windows. Amber's mom has also made appearances on numerous TV shows, including Dr. Phil. She feels like her daughter was slighted by the justice system and that the jury didn't hear all the facts. She said the windows in that apartment building were illegal and that that was the real cause of Josh's death. She also said that Amber and Josh's relationship was a domestic violence relationship and that Josh was heavily into drugs and had even been discharged from the military for his drug use. From what I've been able to find, Josh's family disputes all of this. And in fact, in a letter that Josh's brother wrote to the judge prior to Amber's sentencing, he details an abusive relationship his brother found himself in, abuse at the hands of Amber. He describes their wedding day, quote, my mind was blown when I saw the way Amber was treating Josh on the day of their so-called wedding. The entire wedding party and I had to watch my brother being yelled at and talked down to by Amber. It made me sick. He said later, whenever he would see his brother, it was hard for him. Quote, it was hard to watch my brother being bullied by Amber. I started to dread seeing Josh because almost every time I saw Josh and Amber together, Amber would bully Josh. She would call him names, make fun of him, and was always punching him and pinching him. Josh would act like it didn't bother him, but I knew my brother was embarrassed by the way she treated him. He would say things like, she's just immature, and she's really a nice person when you get to know her. On New Year's Eve in 2010, he said Josh called him, crying. Quote, Josh said she pushed him down the stairs and punched him in the face, and then she called security forces. He asked me what to do, because my job in the Air Force is security forces, and I knew what to do. I told him to tell security forces what happened exactly. Hearing my older brother cry scared me, because he wasn't much of a crier. Josh's brother said that after that incident, the phone calls from Josh started happening more and more. However, the security forces weren't involved every time. He began to worry that Josh wasn't going to do anything about it. The last time he ever spoke to his brother on the phone was in February, right before he was leaving for Afghanistan. Josh had called him and again told him that Amber was hitting him and throwing things at him. Quote, he was asking for advice. I told him to call security forces and get out of the house. I told him to leave and get away from the abuse. I wasn't nice when I was on the phone with him. I was sick of hearing the events happening to him. That was the last time I ever heard my brother's voice. Josh's brother also wrote about hearing about the protective order Josh had filed against Amber from his parents while he was in Afghanistan. He said he thought Josh was going to leave her, but then Josh sent him a message saying that Amber and her mother had come over and bullied him and made him feel guilty for wanting a divorce while she was pregnant. Josh said he was going to get back with her and tried to make the marriage work. But he told him that if it didn't work, he would then divorce her.
I think that this case you know, was truly dramatic beyond this, you know, beyond the obvious from day one. You know, the fact that you do have this unbelievably attractive couple, this growing family, this dramatic, you know, death that was very public and gruesome and in the middle of a highly populated area. But then also down even to the conclusion of the case where they hand down a sentence of 25 years for those 25 floors, you know, that he, you know, lived up on the 25th floor. It was just, I don't know, you could even argue kind of poetic in a way, but then obviously this tragic ending to it all with Amber's passing as well. I just think that that's part of why this case has kind of continued to be something that we talk about even now.
And that's all for today's episode. I'd love to know what you think about this case. Do you think Amber intentionally pushed her husband out of the window? Or did you believe what the defense said? And do you agree with the jury's verdict? Let me know by emailing me at podcast@courtjunkie.com, by tweeting me at courtjunkiepod, or by commenting on Instagram at courtjunkie. I added new tiers with bonus content on Patreon. I now offer $6 and $10 tiers, and I've already uploaded 2 bonus episodes, an interview with the attorney from Levi Aker Kendall's case, and a conversation I had with Christy Lee from Canadian True Crime about the manhunt for 2 teenagers wanted for murder in Canada. You can check that out at courtjunkie.com/support. And I'm also going to be uploading more from my interview with Caitlin Alexander from today's episode, and I'm going to put that in the $10 tier. So once again, that's courtjunkie.com/support. And that's all from me. Thanks again for listening. Until next time.